T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Joe Beningo and Evan Roberts on The Fan.
Joe and Evan, Evan and Joe, on WFAN Sports Radio. If you want to be in the New York, no, gotta go to Joe and Evan, Evan and Joe.
All right, 502 on The Fan, hour 4 of our radio program. Joe and Evan in the afternoon, 877-337-6666 is the phone number. We're here, of course, for another hour. Mike, of course, Francesa will come your way at 6. We have Pete Hoffman, of course, doing a great job on the other side of the glass in Manhattan. Ernie doing a great job on the other side of the glass in Yonkers. We're live from the Town Fair Tire studio. Nobody on top of that beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
And we're joined. This is our case of feeling normal. We get to hear from John Heyman, which we do every Thursday.
John Heyman on a Thursday with no baseball. Hi, John.
That's right. Hey, John.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right, John.
You guys are fantastic. I cannot believe the recall you have of these games from 20, 30 years ago. It's amazing. But you know what I wanted to talk about first with today was I read the Beningo bracket of pain. I understand Joe hasn't looked at it, so I don't want to spoil
it. You broke
it
down in your head. Don't do that,
John.
It is unbelievable. I feel so sorry for Joe right now. I can't even tell you. It is amazing. And I'm not going to give him away. I was told not to give him away because he hasn't looked at it yet. But one of the entries was just Jets drafts. I mean, could have been 20 entries.
I know.
No,
I know.
I mean, Johnny Lamb Jones, that could have been a number one seed.
I'm glad you brought that up, because this was one of the, I don't want to say controversies, but one of the big decisions that we had to make, okay? And that was, if we included every horrible Jet draft pick, it would be overwhelming.
You could do the bracket just on that.
I know. Oh, trust me. There's a lot of kind of other brackets that could be done from this. So the tough decision that was made, and it's a powerhouse. I've had people tweet me, "Hey, this thing could go all the way." I said, "We'll see." But we needed to combine all of the Jet drafts into just a simple entry of Jet drafts, which, as Joe knows, brings a lot of pain in its own right without even needing one.
The 1980 draft, which was when they drafted Johnny Lamb Jones, and they had two number one draft choices that year, and they moved up, okay, in one of the dumb decisions that they ever made. I think Mike Hickey was the guy who was the draft guy. Walt Michaels was the head coach. They moved up to either the second or third pick in the draft. They traded two number ones to move up to get either the second or third pick. And they took Johnny Lamb Jones because they envisioned this unbelievable wide receiver tandem of Johnny Lamb Jones and Wesley Walker. Now, it never played out that way. And Johnny Lamb Jones, turned out not to be anywhere near the player. By the way, he's passed on, so I don't want to get on him now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know
no,
that.
Wesley Walker
was fantastic.
He
was not on the 64, obviously. But
Johnny Lamb Jones is the only guy I remember that any pass that was thrown to him, he would jump. I mean, like, if you threw a pass to him by his feet, he was still jumping for it. So
I didn't recall that, but I did remember that he just had incredible speed.
Oh, yeah.
He eventually was just a track guy, and he just could not catch. It was like if you put me out there and put his legs on my body, and that was it, you know.
Right.
There have been other guys like that, right? Ronaldo Nehemiah, but
Skeets
he could catch
Nehemiah
a little bit better, you know.
Right. Not much better. He wasn't not
bit.
Much
Bob
better.
Hayes. Now, Bob Hayes could
well,
catch
Well, Bob Hayes
better.
Is a Hall of Famer. Bob Hayes was the original track guy that was an NFL player.
But the Jets got the wrong track guy.
Yes,
unfortunately.
They did.
We won't pound on that. I didn't realize he had passed away. But to me, that was the one that really stood out there. I'm not supposed to give many of these away, but I mean, you know, some of them I don't.
So, Ev, let me know what they mean.
I don't
John,
getting
let me
the
stop.
Pirates hat. I don't even know what that means, but I'm trusting
everything
that it was
will be explained when it happens.
Yeah, you'll hear it all, yeah. John. Okay. Let me just say this: so one category is just jet drafts. Period.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
They're on its own.
Okay,
that's on its own.
Yeah, yeah, it had to be.
That should have been a one seed. But
well,
now
you're picking on the seedings of this thing.
I like your other seeds. I like your the obvious number one seed. You had exactly right. I can't say because
should I? You know what?
No,
I
don't
can
even
do.
Say it. Don't say it.
I've already given away two, and that's my limit. I was limited to two to give away.
But right, well,
this is fabulous. It really this is your best work ever, Evan.
Thank
really
you.
Fantastic.
Thank you. I worked very hard on it.
And who else is involved in this? Ray Martell, right? Ray Martell.
Ray gave
Ray.
Me a lot of feedback. Yeah. Well, what I needed to do was, because the way this thing started, Joe, and you get, I was actually crying one night because it was just so painful. I wrote down every horrible draft jet pick, and they were all on the list. And when I was staring at them, I said, I just can't have that. This is impossible.
The worst, the worst draft, even though it turned out the guy they took turned out to be a pretty good player for them, the worst is not taking Marino in 83.
Oh, no doubt.
That definitely
set them back. Yeah, but you could,
set
every
back.
Team did. I mean, there were 20 teams.
No. You know, I'm tired of hearing that, John. All the other quarterbacks were taken already. It was down to Marino was sitting there. Nobody even knew who Kenny O'Brien was. John Elway was taken. Jim Kelly was taken. Tony Eason was taken. And now, Marino. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
Ken who?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know
and
what I mean?
Going in. And I think I was even covering football at that moment. Going in, Marino and Elway were the most talented. Elway was going to go one. I mean, there was some BS. It turned out to be wrong that, rumors about
Marino
off
he was
the
doing
field
drugs.
Was a wild guy or whatever.
Right. That's right.
It was one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen. So,
And it set the franchise back probably 10 years.
It was not good. Yeah. No. Well, I won't give away anymore. But he made the list in his own way, different way. But
I think that's obvious. I think he'll soon figure that out.
Right. Yeah, I won't give it away.
John,
I've given enough away. But I was enthused yet saddened reading this.
No, it's tough, man. It's tough to go through. I was going through it again this morning, and some of them, half of them, actually more than half, make me want to cry because they were painful for me too.
Right.
Yes. But the Jets have had a lot of.
What I did was for those who have looked at the bracket, which is on WFAN.com/pain, I'm sure you enjoyed this, John. I color coded it, or Tom Izzo really color coded it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's in green, it's a Jet moment.
Oh, is that so? It's the colors of the team.
Yeah.
So how'd you do the Knicks and the Mets? Because they're kind of similar colors.
Yeah. So we had to make so for the Mets we did orange. For the Knicks we did blue.
Okay.
And the Rangers I actually put in red just because I had to figure it out.
It's really that's beautiful. Good. It really is beautiful the way it is with all the colors in there. It looks like a rainbow of pain.
Right.
Exactly.
It looks like the head coach's plate chart. You know.
Yes. Pretty much.
I haven't seen it, but I'm just saying with all those colors, that's what it would look like.
Pretty amazing. I almost don't think. I mean, when you look at this, Joe, you're. I mean, I was saddened, so I can't imagine how you're going to react.
It's like life is going to flash in front of me.
We're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, we definitely will. What we're doing, though, John, for two reasons. Number one, we have a lot of time. But number two, most importantly for Joe, is we're not going to overwhelm him with it. We're not doing 10 in one day.
No. We got to do we're going to do it. So we got plenty of time. So we're going to do it slowly, John.
Yeah,
I think you'll have some time.
Based on
what's going on, I think you guys are going to have time for this. But this is fabulous. I got to tell you.
Thank you. Thank you, John. And thank you to Joe for all the pain he went through that made this easy for me to put together.
Lucky me.
Yes, lucky you. Lucky everybody. I think that the beautiful thing about this is most people, not all, can share in a lot of the painful moments throughout history.
Yep.
On the baseball front, John,
mm-hmm.
Hinch and Luhnow are suspended a year. If there is no year, it still counts. Yet a baseball player who suspended a certain amount of games still has to serve the games. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, officially they're saying it's to be determined, but I do think that reading it, that they're suspended through the 2020 postseason. So I think that's fairly clear, although they won't say it officially. I think it's fairly clear that they can come back in 2021. I will say this for them, and I think that would be the right call. They've been suspended. They are not getting paid. We don't know exactly which managers are getting paid. My assumption is that most or all are getting paid. They're going to miss a year of pay. They've taken hits to the reputation. And also, with a year out, and nothing happened, it's hard to fire people. Are you going to fire somebody to bring in a guy who was suspended? So I don't see them getting those jobs, manager and GM, in 2021 anyway. So, I think it would be overkill, in my opinion, because, you know, you've got 30 managers. If there's no season, that's what we're talking about here, 30 managers who have not managed a game. Who are you going to fire? Who's going to be deserving of a firing at that point? So I think they're going to get hit anyway and not get a job, certainly in that role anyway. So to me, it'd be too much to make them sit out 2021 also.
Well, when are they ever going to come down with the Red Sox? Apparently, they've made the ruling on the Red Sox, but
they certainly had the report, and I think he has in his mind what he wants to do, and he's got to write it up, and you know you've got to write it well and make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed and get it all right. I do think that Alex Cora, as much as we all love him, was involved with the Astros. He was just a coach with the Astros, so that's one thing mitigating it a bit. But he was the manager of the 18 Red Sox, and the rumors I've heard, not confirmed, is that he will be hit, but I don't think the team is going to suffer anything like the Astros. And some people have said the Astros haven't suffered enough, but the ruling by baseball sports standards was pretty tough. We thought so at the time, anyway, until they got the spring training and the other players wanted more. But it's nothing like the Astros.
Yeah, look, they were tough on the Astros. It's just that, and we know why, they couldn't get to the players. And I think that's what angered some of the other players, that if no player was serving any kind of suspension, in their mind, they weren't tough enough. But from an organizational standpoint, and certainly what happened to the manager and the GM, it was tough. I don't think there's any denying that.
Yeah, I just don't think they would have been able to suspend the players.
They couldn't.
I know, grievance, they would not have won. They would have lost that. They would not have been able to. By doing this, by giving them immunity, you've gotten to the crux of the situation. They've got the story quickly and were able to make a ruling quickly. My quibble would be, it felt like, and I don't know what you could do if you didn't have the evidence, it felt like the owner, he's been the owner for that terrible Taubman incident that we had where he was screaming at the female writers Osuna and everything that's gone on with the Astros. It felt like the owner got away with something. It was a bit uneven for that reason, but if you don't have the proof, the evidence, there was no email, it makes it tough. I think the players, there was nothing they could do there. And having been in that clubhouse a lot in spring training when we had baseball, they are, and I know people are going to poo-poo this, but their reputations have been hit hard, and they are suffering for it.
Talking, of course, baseball with John Heyman. Now, yesterday, we had a great interview yesterday with Jeff Kent. We had him on. He was tremendous. Really good. He pulled no punches. He really, as straight a shooter as you can get. We both think he's a Hall of Famer. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have yet to vote for him. He does have the most home runs at second base. He did win an MVP. Certainly had a big impact. I'm going to take a close look at that. And the ballot's opening up a bit. So I would say that he's borderline. Nothing wrong with being borderline. To say you're between the top 1 and 2% of the players who've ever played, it's pretty darn good. I'll take another look at it. He was not a good fielder, so that's reflected in the WAR. I know you guys don't care. I'll mention that. I could see it. I'm not. This is not an Albert Bell situation. I think you guys have a fair point, and certainly we'll take a close look at it. I actually have another candidate, a much older one, who I think definitely deserves to be. And I saw Jay Horowitz tweeted about this today. Is Gil Hodges?
Oh, Gil Hodges.
Well, it's
7 years
overdue.
In a row with 100 RBIs. 8 years in a row with a .500 slugging percentage, great defensive first baseman,
question.
And the manager of the amazing 1969 Mets, the greatest championship. Now, I do think that Dodger championship in 88 was fantastic, but, the 69 Mets is the greatest baseball championship ever, and he was the manager of that team. So, I don't know whether they've decided he's close but not quite as a player and close but not quite as a manager, but take it all together, to me, he's got to be Hall of Famer.
Well, basically all the other big guys on the, as I like to call them, the Boys of Summer Dodgers, are in the Hall of Fame. Jackie's in, Duke is in, Campanella's in.
Reese,
he's got to be in.
Right.
Reese is in, exactly, right?
I don't think Farrillo's not in.
No, Farrillo was
not in. But Hodges was a better player. Hodges was a more all-around and a better offensive player than Ferrillo if you look at the numbers. So we're in agreement. We're in agreement on that one. Good.
It stinks that – look, I think Gil should get in, and if Gil he does get in – it just stinks that, to your point, Joe, it didn't happen years ago. Because the longer you move away from a moment, the less people that appreciated him as a player and as a manager that can enjoy that moment. Now, for history's sake, he should be in. Just like for history's sake, Joe Jackson should be in. Even though that's a million years ago now. But it does kind of stink sometimes when it takes too long to put someone in because they don't get to actually enjoy it.
Yeah,
I'm with you. Joe Jackson should be in. I think Pete Rose should be in, too.
Wow.
I'm not saying to lift all the suspension and everything, but we That's should be given. Able to vote on him, and I would vote for him.
Yeah, he is a given that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame.
Answer me this one about getting back to Kent and second base. And look, I watched a lot of Jeff Kent with the Mets. We all did. And I would say he was a terrible second baseman. I'd say he was a little bit below average. That's how I would define him defensively. He was not this horror show at second base. I think that's overstatement.
Okay. I agree.
Okay. I watched a lot of Ryan Sandberg. And Ryan Sandberg was, no doubt about it, a gold glove second baseman. He was a better defensive second baseman than Jeff Kent. No one's going to question that. And while I do think defense is important, their offensive numbers are not that close, if you know what I mean. Jeff Kent handily defeats him offensively. So does defense matter on such a huge level, on such a monstrous level, that it cuts down the gap between the offensive production that Jeff Kent had compared to Ryan Sandberg? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. I do think defense is important, especially in the middle infield. I do think Sandberg was a fantastic defender. Now, you know, I actually am very close with a player who played on his team, I won't name him, who says he's shocked that he was a Hall of Famer so quickly. He did not see Ryan Sandberg as a Hall of Famer. I look at Ryan Sandberg, you know, part of it is the fame. The guy was the key guy at that 1984 team, winning the MVP. Now, I know Kent won an MVP, but that was a magical season, the Cubs getting in. And, I mean, there was a year, was it that the year they had 20 triples, too, and 20 homers? I mean, he did some spectacular things offensively as well. He ran better than Kent. To me, he's clearly a Hall of Famer. I mean, is he Willie Mays? No, but he's clearly a Hall of Famer. To me, Kent is on the border because his defense, as you said, and I agree with everything you said, he's below average.
I don't think that's the only thing that hurts Jeff Kent.
I think here's something too with Sandberg. As far as I'm concerned,
yes,
he's on a high. Even though the Cubs had never won anything at that, you know, then he was on a high profile team. The Cubs were a high profile team.
That helped him. I think the fame factor, Rhino, Sandberg, very, kind of a heartthrob at that time.
The media liked
Chicago.
Him.
Chicago,
right. The media liked him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a media darling. The guy, he's very. He does not speak that much, you know. He's a very quiet guy. His image, and he's a great guy, but his image, I do think the fact that the fame factor matters, and I think it probably helped him. But I think he's a Hall of Famer anyway. The fact that he was not good with the media, I don't believe that's the reason. I mean, if you look at his record, he's a borderline candidate.
No, but I think that's not the only reason. And we actually talked about this with him, and he agrees that him bouncing around the league in a lot of ways hurt him.
Right,
Ryan
right.
Sandberg's got a fan base. Cub fans love him. Fan base? You know, yes, he was a Giant. He was a very good Giant.
But he wasn't the best player on the team. But yes, a great Giant. You're right. He was on Toronto. He was on the Mets. He was on Cleveland. Not until he got to San Francisco was he a great player. So, and playing with one team, as Sandberg did, and, you know, he took 2 years off for personal reasons. He came back and played, and, he was a beloved Cub. I think that is a factor. I do agree with you guys.
Talking to John Heyman, baseball. And then today we got to interview, of course, one of my all-time favorites, and that's Keith Hernandez. And if you're gonna factor WAR in, okay, if you're the big WAR guy, how is Keith?
I wouldn't say I'm the big WAR guy.
Well, you are the big WAR guy.
Compared to you two, I am, yes.
Well, this is the greatest defensive first baseman that ever played.
Agreed. Absolutely.
And as clutch a hitter as we've seen. Now, one thing Keith did not do is he didn't hit home runs as a first baseman. And I think that does hurt him a little bit. Obviously, I think the drug situation, you know, that went down in St. Louis, the drug
trial. Yeah, that shouldn't do it. I mean, Tim Raines was involved in that. Okay. Paul Molitor, although we never talk about it, was involved in that. Nobody ever held it against them.
All right, so good. He won two world championships, you know, with the Cardinals and the Mets. Why is he not even seem to be looked at as a possible Hall of Famer?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In my mind, I blew it. I did not vote for Keith Hernandez when he was on the ballot. I do think he's a Hall of Famer. I do think he should be in. He wasn't even on the ballot that was just decided by the Veterans Committee, or whatever they call the the era.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, Mattingly was on, which I voted for Mattingly, and I would have liked
to have seen him. And I would vote for Mattingly, too.
I would have liked to have seen him get in, but it was Ted Simmons, and, well, Marvin Miller, I understand that one.
Right.
Ted Simmons, really good player. He's not Keith Hernandez to me.
No.
I think they made a mistake. I think Keith Hernandez was the candidate, and I think there were a few candidates I liked there, but you know, I don't understand, because he does have the fame factor. He was an MVP in St. Louis, and even if he didn't win the MVP with the Mets, I mean, he was kind of the guy who made them run. He was kind of the glue to that team, and a very memorable championship team.
You know what I think it
you're
is?
You're right. He's the greatest. At least I'd say he's the greatest. I think Mattingly's right there, but we could say he's the greatest defensive first baseman of all time or tied.
But I think the problem, what hurts him, is that I don't think enough people put enough credence in being the best defensive first baseman.
Yes.
Or really, the best defensive anything outside of shortstop and catcher. I think a lot of other positions. I know Mazeroski got
Brooks
in.
Well, Brooks Robinson too, but even Brooks, man. Because Brooks was a good hitter. I don't think he was ever that great, great hitter. And he wasn't even the best player on his team when Frank Robinson was there.
But he had moments. He had great moments in the World Series.
But
that
he was unbelievable defensively. Yeah, but it was mostly defensively with those great moments. You know what I mean, John?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You're right. Center field, to me, this is why I don't vote for Andrew Jones. I think he's the greatest center fielder of all time, and he doesn't get much support. You're right. The defense, they don't seem to count it much other than shortstop and, you know, even catcher. They don't really do it enough,
right.
I don't think. You
now
know,
you
I mean, Yadier Molina, I don't know what you guys think. I think he's clearly
A Hall of Famer.
Yeah, no, he's a Hall of Famer.
I do.
Yeah, I've seen that debate. I don't know what the debate is.
A Hall of Famer, Molina. As much as I can't stand him, he's a Hall of Famer.
Defense.
You know what Yadi has? And sometimes we don't do this enough in baseball. We do this more in football, where we talk about a football player. We don't look at stats. We look at...
Yeah,
remember watching them and success, like you said, Joe, and winning. And you don't need to look at numbers. You don't need to break them down. You watched them and you knew it. And as much as Yadi has broken my heart and broken all of our hearts, when you watch this guy play, you just look at him and say, that's a Hall of Fame catcher. And I don't need WAR or batting average or OPS or anything.
Two championships as well.
I think that's the answer with him.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. As much as I like WAR, you guys say I like WAR, I'm with you. If you watch the guy's career and you say to yourself, that's a Hall of Famer, that's pretty good. There aren't many players you'll say that about, and Yadier Molina has moved into that category. You know, he started out not a great offensive player.
I'm well aware.
We know.
He hit a big home run.
He wasn't a good hitter when he hit that home run. That's the thing that some people forget about.
Better.
He hit 210 that year.
He got a lot better as a hitter.
You know, when I was at the time, beyond being a Mets and Yankees writer for Newsday, I was a stringer. I think I'm not sure whether that was at Sports Illustrated or Sporting News at the time. It was different times, but it might have been Sports Illustrated. We were doing a poll of who we thought the five best players were, and I think it was at Sports Illustrated. I was writing a column, and you know, the answers were obvious guys who were great players at that time, whether they were Tony Gwynn or whoever. I think somebody might have voted for Edgardo Alfonso. He had just had a big year. Ken Griffey, whoever it was, and I don't remember exactly. I remember Tony Bernazard, who's been pilloried.
Tony Bernazard.
He had Yadier Molina on the list, and he was not. I remember looking at him like, Yadier Molina? I mean, the guy's a 250 hitter with no power. And you know what? I mean, maybe that was a scouting eye. He turned out to be right in a way. I mean, he was the only one, and I was like, what? But, you know, his defense was so great, even when he wasn't a good hitter, that he was very valuable even then.
That's the thing, and I wonder, you know, because when you're a catcher, there's different ways to look at defense. There's throwing guys out at second base, which Yadi did off the charts. But I think in a lot of ways that ability has been devalued because less teams and less players are stealing bases.
Running. They don't run as much. And,
yeah, so I think the new thing is, well, does he frame pitches well? And now we've got these weird stats that determine how well of a pitch framer somebody
that
is.
That may be a go away, though, if we have the robo-umps, too. So it changes all the time, you know. And I thought Piazza got a bad knock. He was not a good throw. Or as we know, but he was good at handling pitchers and good at receiving. You know, I thought he had a bad knock. I thought he was okay defensively, and obviously the greatest hitting catcher of all time. So, but I'm with you guys. If you can look at a guy and say to yourself, "That's a Hall of Famer," there are many that you'd say that about. And that, you know, I'm watching all these MLB Network games like you do. The 91.
Yep.
And I was at that game, and I didn't remember a lot of the
Twins. You talk about
plays.
The Twins. Twins, Braves?
The Game 7, Smoltz and Morris.
Right.
And boy, the Braves had chances. Not only that decoy that Knobloch pulled off with Gagne, I believe it was, as a shortstop, and faked out Lonnie Smith when he didn't score. Boy, there were a lot of chances there. But Jack Morris is a guy, if you watched his career and really thought about it, this is a Hall of Famer, you know? Whereas if you looked at the war and the other stuff, and this is why all these guys were against it forever,
right.
And I'm glad that, you know, all the knocks I might make on the Veterans Committee or whatever, they put Alan Trammell and Jack Morris in the Hall of Fame, and I applaud them. I think they did the right thing.
Let me ask, you know, you mentioned Game 7, Braves-Twins. I'm having a field day watching old games. In fact, I was going to ask Joe what game I should watch tonight. I'm leaning towards a football game tonight, though. I'm leaning towards maybe one of the Giants Super Bowl wins, maybe even going back further, maybe the 81 NFC Championship game. I've thought about that game as a possibility.
The catch,
but
Dwight Clark.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, maybe that's the one I'll watch tonight. Yeah. Is that a good one to break down tomorrow, Joe?
It's one of the great games
right.
ever.
I'm going to do that tonight.
Yeah, and Joe mentioned that trade. I'm sorry to bring up Lamb Jones again. I feel bad about this, but the Jets traded with the 49ers and traded them two players who were on their first championship team, I believe. One of them was Earl Cooper, a tight end.
Tight end from Rice.
Yeah. Right.
He was a running back initially, then he was a tight end.
Cooper. Right, right. So, sorry to bring that up, but
Look at you. Look at you showing off the knowledge.
As I said, they traded two first-round picks for Johnny Lamb Jones.
Yeah.
Right. Well, of the bit, because I've watched a lot of these classics. We were talking earlier today about Game 5 of the 96 World Series, another pitcher's duel John Smoltz was on the wrong end of. A lot of games. For you, as somebody that's watched them all, now you're rewatching them, if you had to pick right now the greatest baseball game you ever saw, what's the one that jumps out at you as number one?
That Braves Twins.
Twins Braves?
That 1-0 where Morris pitched 10 innings. To me, that stamped him as a Hall of Famer, you know, beside the fact he was on three championship teams, the ace of three championship teams, and 14 opening day starts. I know a lot of the staff people will poo-poo that, but that game was incredible. The decoy by Knobloch, the chances that were missed, 1-0 Game 7, to me, that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the Game 7 of 2001, the whole 2001 World Series, which they played on MLB Network, this afternoon, games 4 and 5, the ones the Yankees won with home runs.
Right.
And then game 7, that was a pretty darn good series. But one game to me is that game 7 in 1991.
How about the Bucky Dent game? Now, you were young. You were a young dude. I was young, too, but I'm a little older than you.
Yes,
you
fantastic
know,
game. I watched that one, too, and incredible. They were interviewing Bucky Dent, and I think it was Lella. And all the different things that happened there with his son, where Pinella, it looked like he couldn't see the ball, and he somehow stabbed at it and kept it in play in right field. And to have Yastrzemski, who had homered, their big star, and Gossage on the mound.
Makes the last
at the
out.
End of the game.
Struggling, too,
Rice, and then I think it was two Hall of Famers, and Tom Verducci pointed this out, and Gossage is a Hall of Famer, and Yastrzemski to pop out after he had homered earlier in the game. That game was just huge. And Guidry, and it still sticks in my craw because I was a Yankee fan back then. Guidry should have been the MVP. I mean, you can't do better than 25-3 with 248 strikeouts and a 1.74 ERA.
I mean, 46 home runs and 148 RBIs.
All
is pretty
right,
good.
But that's been done. That's been done. 25-3 has not been done. You know, and the Yankees won. So you know, and Guidry pitched that game on 2 days rest. He should have won that MVP. I'm still upset about that. I was in high school.
I agree with you there.
I was in high school. Did you guys agree with me on that one?
I agree with you about Guidry being the MVP of the season that year. I did.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. But I actually rewatched that game 2 weeks ago, and I could sit here all day and look at numbers. That's one of those things I respectfully say, you experience the season, you're going to have a better idea of that. I think for us, anyone who's too young, myself included, to just sit here and look at Ron Guidry's numbers and Jim Rice's numbers and give you a fair opinion on who's the MVP is not fair to what an MVP is. So I trust you guys that watching it, that Ron Guidry had that amazing a kind of year as a pitcher that – because it takes a lot to win the MVP as a pitcher.
Right. I don't think he got any first place. I might be wrong, but he got very few first place votes. They all went to Rice. There was a bias against pitchers. Now, later, pitchers started to win. I think the next year, did Willie Hernandez win for the...
84, 1984.
Okay, several years later, a few years later.
We've seen pitchers do it. It just, you know what it takes sometimes? Right. It takes the happy world.
Vita
Blewett
won it in 71, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Cy Young. And MVP.
But you need a year in which there isn't somebody having a great offensive year to kind of coincide with it. Like, you sort of need that. And
maybe, but 25-3 with a 1.74 ERA?
That's pretty good.
I get it, but Jim Rice had a huge year that year. I mean, 46 home runs that year.
Guys who hit 40 home runs, that happens.
By the way, here, I'm looking at it. Jim Rice got 20 first-place votes. Ron Guidry got 8 first-place votes.
Okay, so he did get a few. I didn't have a vote that year. I was in high school, so they didn't give me a vote. But I would have voted for Guidry, and it would have been a biased vote because I was a Yankee fan. So what can you do? But I do think he deserved it, even now, looking at it objectively.
Okay. If you're going to watch a bat, I'm just thinking about this, and you know, we obviously all the great Met games, but I'm going to get away from the Mets for a second. If you want to watch the greatest – World Series game that there ever was, you got to watch Game 6 of the 1975 World Series between the Red Sox and the Cincinnati Reds.
Fantastic.
That with Carlton Fisk. Right.
Yep. Fisk waving the ball in. Yeah, incredible.
Watch that game.
And that game is on YouTube, so that's available.
Watch that game.
And the Mets had some good ones. Yeah.
Oh, no, we've been through.
86, yeah, the Mets of course. Against Houston, and then Game 6. That was fantastic.
So let me ask you this, Joe. Because there's only so much time in a day, and I do have to spend some time with my wife and son.
Right, I know you do.
Which one should I watch to talk about with you tomorrow? 75 Game 6 or 81 NFC Championship game?
You could do either one. I think we're a little more in a baseball mode right now, so I would go with the 75 World Game 6 because so many things, there had been a lot of rain. Let me just say this, too. There had been a lot of rain in Boston for, like, I think there might have been 3 days of rain in Boston. So there was a lot of time between Game 5 and Game 6. And then they finally play Game 6. I think Tiant actually starts the game for the Red Sox, so I don't think he pitched that well in that game. But there were so many twists and turns. Bernie Carbo hits a huge home run in that game. There's so many different things. Dwight Evans makes this great catch in right field to take a home run away. I think it was from Joe Morgan. There was so many different things that went on in that game. You need to watch that game. That is an unbelievable. And then, of course, the Red Sox lose Game 7.
That's the best. That's the funniest part.
There was so much angst with Boston. These games with Boston, the Boston and the Mets in 86 with Game 6. Boston against the Yankees with the Bucky Dent. Boston here, they won that game with Fisk, but then they lost with Joe Morgan in Game 7. I mean, anytime Boston was in it, the drama was greater because they always had these great players, and they just didn't quite get over the hump. Their lineup in 78 against the Yankees, it was sick. I mean, Rice, but all the other guys that were on that team between Fred Lynn
and Stewie Evans and Carlton Fisk.
I mean, you know, the only weak hitter, and not weak, he was a good player at the time, is Jerry Remy, now obviously a broadcasting star there. But Fisk, who was a fantastic hitting catcher, I mean, that team was crazy good, and they blew that 14.5 game lead and then lost this. Yeah, I think part of it, Evan, you're right, is that dramatic season where they had a 14.5 game lead and then lost it, and then lost it.
They were down by
two or three games at the end and won the last few and got to this playoff, and Guidry had to come back on 2 days, I believe it was 2 days rest, but it was short rest, and win that. So it was all the angst involving Boston, and you guys mentioned the 2003 game, Aaron Boone, the last bit of angst, that home run, and by the way, we had him this week, Tony Gwynn and I, on the Big Time Baseball podcast, and he's fantastic, talks about everything. He's just a great guy who opens up. We had him on for half an hour, and that can be seen on radio.com or my Twitter or whatever. That last bit of angst was that Boone home run. I don't, you know, that's ranked as the ninth greatest home run or something that the game isn't probably ranked as that great as that high up, but I can
remember. It was a hell of a game, John.
That was a tremendous game.
I mean, jeez.
That game, the Aaron Boone game?
That was a great game.
That's an all-time great game.
Is it an all-time great game?
Yes.
Oh, I think so.
Yes.
Well, sure. You know, I mean, obviously it's Yankees and Red Sox.
But, John, think about this for a second.
The whole thing with Pedro.
Who started the game? Think about the pitching matchup.
But I remember that home run, not the rest of that game, obviously, very well, but I remember that home run like it was yesterday. Aaron Boone said it's foggy to him. He sees the play. He's played it back a million times, and he sees different things each time. But the actual hitting the ball, he really doesn't remember it. I remember him hitting it, and then I won't name names, but there was a writer who was rooting for the Red Sox and taking his work bag and throwing it against the back wall. He was so upset.
Say the name.
I don't care who wins. I mean, I was a Yankee fan. I like Guidry, but you know, here it's 2003. I'm an old man.
So who was it, John? Who was it?
I have no names.
Come on. Out of curiosity.
No, I can't.
All right.
You want to tell us?
No, I basically say anything, you know.
You know what's funny, John? I swear to you, as soon as this segment is over, I'm texting you. And I'm going to say, who is the
do
person?
Do not mention it on the air. Right.
I would never. No, I would never do that. Never.
All right.
You sure you don't want to do that? You sure, John?
No, I'm not going to do it.
You're not going to do it?
Well, John.
No, it was a bad moment. I think this person would even know it, too.
Okay, fair enough.
By the way, Dennis Eckersley, also a Hall of Famer on that 78 team. He actually won 20 games for the Red Sox that year.
That team was fantastic. Incredible. I mean, he was great for the Yankees. He lost the big game for the Yankees, and he wrapped up the World Series for the Yankees, too, didn't he?
Oh, you're talking about Mike Torres, you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Who
no, I'm talking about, I said Dennis Eckersley was
okay.
on. He won 20 games for the Red Sox. He was a Hall of Famer.
People forget that. He threw a no-hitter. He was the ace of the Indians. He was a great starter, and then La Russa had this great epiphany, make him a reliever, and, you know, he was probably, other than Mariano, the greatest reliever of all time. Mariano's a different category.
But, I think a part of Dennis Eckersley's kind of Hall of Fame resume is what you touched on, that for a good part of his career, until his early 30s, he was a really good starting pitcher. Yep.
Fantastic. Yep. Incredible talent. He really was.
No doubt. John, great talking to you, man.
John,
all right.
Always
great, guys.
Stay well, John.
You too, guys.
John Heyman on All the Baseball. We'll come back and take your calls the rest of the way as we lead you right up till 6.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.